Okay, today's stuff is Nida Kaftet. A few things before we start. Number one, the Siyum is getting very close, so reminding people to register. Please come. If you're from afar, you can adopt the daf and be part of the collective Siyum. There's a lot of PR going around about it. If anyone's interested in being interviewed, has an interesting story about Daf Yomi, or just wants to be interviewed, let me know. You can email me at Michelle, M-I-C-H-E-L-L-E, at Hadran, H-A-D-R-A-N, .org.il. Okay. Second thing, Refuah Shlema, specifically today for Mordechai Ben Rezal, and the usual, Nitan Elinam Ben Shein Tzipora, Sarah Bayanta Rachel, Levana, Meira Bat Hadassah Lisheva. Okay, starting from the top of the daf. Yatza Mechutach Omesoas. So in yesterday's Mishnah, what did we see? That if a vlad comes out in pieces, or misoas, breached, right, legs first, mishiyatza rubo harehu kihilod. Instead of normally we say the head would make the majority of the head, right, if it's coming out the regular way, so then already the head comes out, that's enough, you don't need the whole body, and even rov rosh. But in this case, since it came out breached, so we're going to need rov, and if it came out in parts, it's not enough to have, it sounds like, we'll see, sounds like it's not enough to have the head come out, you would need rov. Okay, we're going to have to see, is that really the case? So we're going to start with the machloket Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan, two Amoraim in Eretz Yisrael, about this Mishnah. Amar Rabbi Elazar, afilu harosh imahen. Even if the rosh comes out, mechutach, right, it comes out in parts, even if the head comes out, that matches what I just said, right, doesn't matter, that doesn't, because we've talked about this before, generally we would say, and we'll see if this is a subject of debate, that if it's not a viable fetus, or it's, right, in this case, it's not even, right, it's coming out in parts, so rov rosh doesn't mean it's considered a birth. Rabbi Yochanan amar lo shanu ela she'en haroshi mahen. Aval haroshi mahen harehu ki yelod. According to the Masoret HaShas, it should be different words here, it should say harehu ki yelod. Rabbi Yochanan said, this is only when it says mechutach, it means a leg, an arm, some other part of the body. But if the head comes out, Rabbi Yochanan would think head is considered birth, even if it comes out in parts. So the question is, what's their debate? So the suggestion is, lema b'dishmuel kamiflege. Maybe their machloket is, do they agree with Shmuel or disagree with Shmuel? Tamar Shmuel, ein harosh poter b'nepalim. So the suggestion here, again, when we say we're going to suggest, they're always going to reject it. The suggestion is, it definitely will help today if you use the sheets. There's a lot of confusing things and the sheet organizes. So the first suggestion is, why don't we say their argument is about Shmuel? What does Shmuel say? Now, Shmuel's not talking about a case where the baby's in pieces, the fetus is in pieces. Shmuel's talking about a case where you have twins in utero. One is a nephel, is never going to make it, and the other one is a ben kayama, is going to make it. Now, if you have these twins, and the head of the nephel, the one who's not going to make it, the non-viable fetus, comes out, and then goes back in, we learned this in Bechorot, if you remember, about the head coming out, if it comes out and goes back in, right, that's the most important relevance for this halacha, comes out and goes back in, it's not considered a birth. Why is that relevant? Eventually the head will come out. The point being that if the head goes out and comes back in, and there's a twin inside, and the twin, who's the Ben Kayama, comes out after, so that's what it means, Ein HaRosh Poter B'Nepalim. The Rosh that came out first of the non-viable fetus, since it's a Nephel, it's not Poter, the Ben Kayama, from being a Bechor, meaning if the head came out, went back in, and the Ben Kayama came out first, full body, we're going to say that it is a Bechor. And we didn't count the Yitziyat HaRosh. So now it seems very simple. Rabbi Elazar, who says, in Mechutach, the Rosh doesn't mean anything, will be just like Shmuel. Just like in Mechutach, the head coming out doesn't mean anything, also as a Nephel. It's the same thing. And Rabbi Yochanan says, no, I disagree with you, Shmuel. Okay, I think you're wrong, basically, right? I would say, HaRosh is Poter b'Nephalim, and it's Poter b'Mechutach. So now they say, no. B'Shalem d'kulei ama lo pligi. Okay, now, you would have thought, until now, what do we think? A Nephel is like Mechutach. Now we're going to see that there's kind of a range. Okay, there's Mechutach, which is, you know, cut up in pieces. There's Nephel, and then there's Shalem. Okay? There's Nephel Shalem, right? And then there's Shalem, who's a Ben Kayama. Right? So there's a range here. There's the middle case is this nethel that's not a viable fetus, but it is whole. Okay, so basically they're going to say nobody agrees with Shmuel with the nephil if it comes out because it's full, it's whole. So we are going to act, since it's whole, one piece, we're going to count the coming out of the head as birth. But when it comes to mechutach, there's a debate. If the head comes out, is that considered or is it not considered? So interestingly, none of them hold like Shmuel. Okay? They're going to say, since that's a middle case, that case already will say is as if it came out, as if it was viable, where we count the rush. So kule amalo pligi in the shalem. Ki pligi b'mechutach, demar savar nawayin b'mechutach, because mar savar b'shalem hu dekachashiv, b'mechutach lo kachashiv. So Rabbi Elazar will say, when it's a nefel shalem, I disagree with Shmuel and I think it counts, but that's only because it's whole. But if it comes out in pieces, coming out of the head is really not significant. Like, what's the significance of a head without the rest of the body? Umar savar b'mechutach nami chashiv. And Rabbi Yochanan says, no, even if the head comes out and it's just the head, that's still significant. Okay, so this is the first way of reading the machloka between them. Okay, so again, their machloka is about a mechutach. If the head comes out, is that considered, do we consider that yelod or not? And then we tried to say with Shmuel, we end up saying, no, they disagree with Shmuel entirely. Their case is different than Shmuel's case. Now skip the parentheses. Now we're going to go to Ika Dematne Lala Hashmatita Ba'ape Nafshe. Some people said that the machloke, Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yochanan, wasn't about the Mishnah, wasn't trying to say, oh, the Mishnah's only in this case. It was taught on its own that Amar Rabbi Elazar, this is the version, it's the same meaning, but Amar Rabbi Elazar, Ein Harosh Kirov Evarim. Okay, the head, when it comes to non, right, here it actually sounds like, they're really talking like Shmuel when it's a nephil, okay? The head is never considered like the majority of the body if it's not a viable fetus. For Rabbi Yochanan amar, harosh kerov evarim. And Rabbi Yochanan says, the rosh is like rov evarim. And then according to this version, it's not a suggestion, it's obvious, v'kamif legebe de Shmuel. And the machloket is exactly whether they hold like Shmuel or not. Because really, they're talking more about a nephil case and not necessarily about mechutach. Okay, now we're going to have a question on Rabbi Yochanan from our Mishnah. Tanan, it says in our Mishnah, Yatza mechutach o misoras. Notice the word, right? It either comes out in pieces or it comes out breached. Now, notice, Midika Amar o misoras. That word o is missing and it's very critical here. So you see the Aleph sent in a Hagahot Abahu says, add the word o in here, there's no mistake. Since it says either in pieces or breached, it makes it sound like, since it says this or this, it sounds like mechutach in the normal way, meaning head first, or breached where it comes out legs first. And what does it say? So it sounds like mechutach comes out in the normal way, meaning the head will come out first. V'ka'amar, what does it say in the Mishnah? Mishiyatzahu bo, hareze ki yelod. The head coming out doesn't consider it a birth. So what do you see? That goes kashya l'Rabbi Yochanan. That goes explicitly against Rabbi Yochanan, who said if the head comes out, that's enough to consider it a birth. So amar l'cha Rabbi Yochanan, ema yatza mechutach u'mesoras. He says, just change it. It shouldn't say mechutach or mesoras. It should say mechutach and mesoras. It comes out in parts and in the wrong direction. V'ha'o katane, but what do you mean? It says, oh, how could you change the words? So he says, hachi kamar, this is the way you should read it. Yatza mechutach, o shalem. If it came out, here's the o, but they add a word. It's not mechutach or mesoras, it's mechutach or whole, okay? Which matches the second reading of their machloket. Vizeh mesoras, and both are coming out, right? Whether it's whole or it's in parts, it's coming out the wrong way. Without the head coming first, then mishiyatza rubo hareze ki yelod, and then it would be obvious, well, if it came out head first, well, then head first, right, the head coming out, we'd already consider it a birth. Amar Rav Papa, kitinai. Okay, Rav Papa now comes and says that the machloka at Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yochanan is actually a machloka tana'im. How so? We're going to bring a tana'itic source, and now we're going to have to explain, Rabbi Yossi's not going to be very clear what he means, and we're going to explain it to show that it's machloka tana'im. Then, okay, that's going to be Rav Papa's explanation. Then Rav Zvi is going to come and say, I disagree with your reading of that source. He's going to explain it differently. He's also going to have the same conclusion, though, that it is a machloket tana'im. Okay, that the machloket, Rav Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan, about whether the head coming out in a non-viable fetus is considered a birth or not considered a birth is actually a subject of debate between Tana Kama and Rabbi Yossi. Yatsa machutach o masoras, mishayatsa rubo hareyu kiyolo. That's our Mishnah. Rabbi Yossi Omer, except that we're quoting it from a Braita now, okay? And in this Braita, we have another line. Rabbi Yossi Omer, mishayatsa kitikno. So now it's not so clear, what does Rabbi Yossi mean? Mishayatsa kitikno is referring to what? So my kamar, what does he mean? Amar papa hachi kamar. This is what he means to say. So now we're back to Tana Kama, because you have to understand Tana Kama in order to understand what Rabbi Yossi is saying. Yatsa mechutach umisoras. If it came out in pieces and flipped, breached, mishiyatsa rubo hareyu kiyelod. What does that seem to imply? Ha kitikno harosh poter. But if it was going the right way, then the rosh would be poter. Who does that match? Rabbi Yochanan, that if the head came out, it was cut in pieces, that would be considered a birth already. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Mishayatsa Rubo, Kitikno. What does he say? Like, let's read it differently. Mishayatsa Kitikno, you need Rubo, right? Even if it comes out the right way, you would need Rov. Head doesn't matter, and that then falls out exactly like Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan. Matkifla Rav Zvid, Rav Zvid said, no, wait, something doesn't make sense into what you're saying. So he says like this, Michlal, from what you're saying, one can infer that what? Okay, before we even start, what did he say? Yatsa kitikno. Okay, you can look at the chart, it'll help. In the Koshiyal of Rav Papa Mirav Zvid. What did Rabbi Yossi say? Yatsa kitikno, if it comes out normally, not normally, it's coming out in parts, but it comes out head first, then Rov will be poter and not the Rosh. Now what's implied from that statement? It's implied that if it goes kitikno, then rov is poter. But if yatz bichlal de b'misoras, if it comes out breached, rubo nami lo poter. It sounds like he's saying, what did we say? The first opinion said the rosh is poter. And he's saying, no, if it comes out mechutach in parts, then you need rov. But we're going to jump one level farther. He says, it seems to imply, but if it came, since he didn't say yatsa mechutach or mesoras, then, and so it didn't say yatsa mechutach kitikno and lo kitikno, rubo would be poter. It sounds like rov won't even be poter if it comes out both pieces and breached. It sounds like he doesn't even think it's a yelod at all. And he says, why not? Ha kaimalan de rubo kikulo. So what's implied from the way you're reading Rabbi Yossi, again, you have to question whether that's really necessarily implied, but assuming you imply that, it makes no sense. Hare rubo kikulo, it all came out, right? And it should be poter also, even if it's misohas. So he understands it differently. Ela amar av zvid. Hachi kamar. This is the way you should read it. Again, back to Tana Kama. Yatsa mechutach umisohas. It came out in pieces and breached. But then, ha-kitikno, ha-rosh poter. Okay, that's still Rabbi Yochanan, the way we understood him, right? This matches Rabbi Yochanan, that if it comes out in pieces and breached, then you need rov, but if it came out head first, even in pieces, that would be patur, right? In other words, already, it would be considered a birth. Rabbi Yossi Omer, mishayatsa kitikno lechayim. Okay, what does he mean by that? He says, mishayatsa kitikno lechayim, meaning if it's going to live, then it will be rosho poter. In other words, rosho will only be poter if it comes out head first and it's viable. But if it's not viable, then rubo is going to be poter. And then, according to him, that matches also the machlok at Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan. Tanya Nami Hachi, and here's a brighter to support his reading. Yatsa mechutach umesoras. But if it was right, kitikno, then the rosh would be poter. Again, that means it's considered a birth. Right? Again, poter, the lashon of poter, it exempts the one who comes after from din b'chor because this is considered a birth. And Rabbi Yossi Omer, mishayatsa kitikno l'chayim. And here the version matches that, which is, it's viable. Okay, and then he's trying that at a different stage. If it's viable, then the rosh will be poter, but not if it's not viable. Ve'ezehu kitikno l'chayim, and what will consider it? Now, he says, what's mishiyatza kitikno l'chayim, what? Mishiyatza rov rosho, right? Rov rosho is already going to be considered enough for a regular, if it's a viable fetus. Ve'ezehu rov rosho, now what's considered rov rosh? So, Rabbi Yossi Omer, this is just the continuation of that braita. Mishiyatzu tzda'av, his temples come out. Abachana mishum Rabbi Yoshua Omer, mishiyatza padachto, his forehead. There's not a huge difference between the forehead and the temples. It's just, I guess the temples are a little bit lower. V'yeshomrim mishiyahu karnei rosho, which seems to be the like a part jutting out in the back right above the neck. That's already a lot more of the head than the other two opinions. Okay, new Mishnah. Hamapelet ve'en yadua mahu. Teshev lazachar v'lanekeva. A woman has a miscarriage and she doesn't know whether it was male or female, so she needs to wait both for Zachar and Akeva, meaning, I've said this many times, 14 days of Tumah, because maybe it was a girl and you need all 14, and then only 26 more days of Dmei Tohar, because maybe it was a male and the Dmei Tohar ended day number 40. So 14 plus 26 gets you to 40. Ein yadua im Vlad haya, what if she's not sure if it was a Vlad or not? She has a hapala, she doesn't know, was it, right? Something comes out. She doesn't know, was it a Vlad or was it what we've talked about, a ruach, phantom pregnancy, where there was nothing there. So if she doesn't know, in Vlad haya im lav, teshev lazachar v'lanekeva v'lanida. This basically means no dam tohar. It means the worst case scenario, female, 14 days of tumah. If it wasn't a Vlad, then any blood she sees after that is going to have to be considered dam nida, in which case she doesn't have any dam tohar at all. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. The Gemara starts off with the statement of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, which we're going to deal with after. Avra Nahar, we learned this case already. She goes through a river, vihi pila, and she has apala in the river, which means right now she loses the fetus. We don't know where it is. We can't check whether it was male or female. Mivia korban v'necha. We assume that it was a miscarriage of a baby and not, or a fetus and not a ruach. Okay, even though we don't have it. Why? Halacha charov nashim. This is classic dinei rov. We go by the majority of women. V'rov nashim v'lav ma'aliyah yeladam. Most women give birth to actual fetuses and not to, they don't have phantom pregnancies. So now they say, wait, something doesn't make sense. What did it say in our Mishnah? Tanan, ein yadua im Vlad hayav. The woman miscarries and doesn't know whether it was a Vlad or not. Right? What would you say according to Rabbi Yishev and Levi? Follow the rove. What did the Mishnah say? Teshev lazachar v'lanekeva v'lanida. We don't assume it was a leida, otherwise she would have had at least 26 days of dam tohar. Amai teshev l'nida. Lema halach charov nashim. V'rov nashim v'lav ma'alya yeladan. So what's the answer? There's no contradiction between Rabbi Yishev and Levi and the Mishnah because each is talking about a different scenario. Matznitim b'shalohu v'sekau bara. V'chikam Rabbi Yishev and Levi k'shuch v'sekau bara. There's a difference between the two cases. The Mishnah is talking about a case where we didn't know for sure that she was pregnant before. So if she's something comes out of her body, we have no idea whether we know whether she was pregnant or not. So we can't say she follows Rov Nashim. Rov Nashim who have discharges of all types, not necessarily all births. But Rabbi Yishev ben Levi was talking about where we knew she was pregnant. Once we know she's pregnant, well, then we can assume then that what she gave birth to was actually a fetus and not a ruach. Remember, ruach just means that she believed she was, we talked about this before, it was a phantom pregnancy. She believed she was pregnant, even though, you know, she kind of, almost like a hypochondriac, she created the scenario in her head, thought she was pregnant, she was having simanim of pregnancy, but she wasn't really pregnant. And therefore, when something comes out, it's really nothing. Okay, Tashma. Now we're going to bring another question on Rabbi Yishev ben Levi. From a Tanaitic source. Behemah sheyatzah mele'ah uba rekanit. We had an animal that was pregnant. It hasn't yet given birth to any animals yet, any offspring. The behemah wanders off, comes back, she's no longer pregnant, and she doesn't have any young attached to her. Haba acharav b'chor misafek. So the one who's born after this is considered a b'chor out of doubt. Maybe she gave birth, maybe she didn't. Now, why, if you go by Rov Nashim Yoldot, you would say the same about Rov Behemot Yoldot. And why, if Rabbi Yishev ben Levi says, we follow Rov Nashim Yoldot, and in a female, in the case of the woman, we assume it was a real birth, Why don't we say the same thing here? Why is it only b'chor misafek? Amai halacha charov behemot. B'rov behemot v'lav ma'al yiladam. Most behemot don't have these phantom pregnancies. V'hai pashutu. And the next one should be for sure not a b'chor. Pashut is the opposite of a b'chor. A simple one, not a b'chor. Amar Ravina mishum de'i kalameimar. So Ravina answers, you could say like this. Rov behemot yoldot davar poter mi'b'chorah. Okay, so most animals, it's true, give birth to something that would exempt the next one from b'chor. Umi'utan, however, there's a minority of them, yoldot davar sheino poter mi'b'chorah. Okay, so far he hasn't said anything new. That's still rov. Rov, give birth to animals, and only a small percentage give birth to a ruach. Avach kol hayoldot mitanfot. But all animals who give birth have some sort of discharge that comes after the birth. And we can say this animal didn't have that discharge, and therefore we can assume that that weakens the rove. Okay? In other words, we have rove, but we have something against it, which is we know that all animals have some discharge. Now you have to wonder, if the animal wandered off and came back, maybe how do we know they didn't have the discharge? I think the assumption is that there's a discharge for a while after, and I think the animal didn't wander off for very long. I think it was the animal wandered off for a day, came back, and the assumption is that this discharge comes out a day or two after, and it wasn't that the animal was out of sight for that long. That's what you have to assume. So now they question this, and they say, wait a minute. What did we say about this b'chor? This b'chor is a b'chor misafek, the second one. According to this, if we say, kol hayoldot mitanfot, and this one, lo mitinfa, what did we say? It weakens her robe and therefore it's safek. That doesn't make much sense, because why? E kol hayoldot mitanfot, if it's like you said, that all animals who give birth have this tinuf that comes out of them, this dirty discharge, ha midelo mitanfa b'chor ma'al yehu. It should be perfect proof then, forget about dine robe. This is proof that this animal actually didn't give birth. In which case, the next in line should be a b'chor vadai and not a b'chor misafek. So therefore, what do they say? No. Change what we just said. Ela ema. Start from the beginning now. Rov yoldot mitanfot. Or no, actually not start from the beginning. And that's, I thought they were going to go back to, right? Rov give birth and only miut don't. But rov yoldot mitanfot. Not that all yoldot mitanfot. Most animals have this discharge. So we have the majority on the one hand that give birth. On the other hand, we have the majority have tinuf. This one didn't have the tinuf. So therefore, that majority weakens the other majority. We have two majorities that are operating against each other. That's how we end up in this middle situation, which we say it's a safek. Okay. Now we get to something that we mentioned a number of dapim ago, and I said when we get here, we'll explain it because it was too complicated to get into as an aside on that page, and you'll see why. Kiyata Rabin, when Rabin came from Eretz Yisrael, Amar, he said, Mativ Rabbi, remember Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi was also in Eretz Yisrael. So when he comes from Eretz Yisrael, he says to the people in Babel, he says, when Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi made this statement, again, what did he say? She goes through an ahar, she's mipila, she brings a korban, and is eaten a vadai korban, because we follow Rov Nashim, and Rov Nashim Yoldo. So at the time when it was said, Mativ Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina asked a question against him from the case of a to'ah, of a woman who loses track of when she gave birth. Below yadana mai tiyuvta, and I didn't understand how that really was a question. So to get to understand this whole thing, we have to get into mahi. What was this case of a to'ah? Ditanya. Okay, we're going to have a very odd case. Okay, you can follow in the chart on the second side of your sheet. Okay, so again, this braita was used as a question on Rabbi Yosef ben Levi and by Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina. Rabin says, I don't understand how that is used as a question on Rabbi Yosef ben Levi. So isha shiatz tamalea uba'a rekanit. So just like the animal, except it's a woman, the woman goes off pregnant. She comes back without anything. Okay, and now. She doesn't know what happened. They say she must have been like a shota or something. And she doesn't have knowledge to be able to really understand what happened and explain to us when, you know, did she give birth to something? Was it a vlab? Was it a ruach? Whatever it was. So, and more importantly, when she gave birth, because we need to know when to start counting. And here we're not talking about that she disappeared for the day and came back. She was gone a while. And we don't even know, according to this story, we don't even know when she left. She just kind of appears on the scene We know the last time we saw her, she was pregnant. We know she's not now, and we don't know what happened. Be'avia lefanenu, actually, you know, you think about it, sometimes this happens, you see someone who was pregnant, and then you see them not pregnant, you don't see them with a baby, right? Obviously, they might very likely have one, and you don't know what to say, because you didn't hear, and it's like uncomfortable, you don't know what happened. So this is kind of, you can imagine the situation, she comes up, we don't know what happened, and she can't even tell us. So, he'avia lefanenu, now, here are the facts on the ground of this scenario. He'avia lefanenu shlosha shvuin tehorim. Okay, the first 3 weeks, I did it in color on here. Okay, the first 3 weeks are white. That means she didn't see any blood the first 3 weeks that we met her. It's not necessarily the first 3 weeks after birth, although it could be. It could be she gave birth yesterday. But in any case, right, that would be unlikely that she's not bleeding. But let's just say the first 3 weeks we see her, she doesn't bleed at all. Va'asara shavuot, the next 10 weeks, echad tameh ve'echad tahor. Okay, every other week she bleeds. She has bleeding, okay, l'seirugim we call it, every other week. So, mishamesher leor 35, she can sleep with her husband only on day number 35. Until that point, she's not allowed to. We'll have to see why. Okay, that means at the end of the fifth week, I put it on the chart, the number 35. The end of the fifth week, she can sleep with her husband. It's the first time she's allowed to him. Umat bilinota 95 tfilot divrei Beit Shammai. She dunks in the mikveh 95 times. Wow, that's going to be creative, how to get to these 95 times. Okay, the basis, I'm not going to get into it yet, the Gemara is going to start explaining later. The basis of Beit Shammai is, and we're not going to even understand the whole, we're not going to get to all 95 yet, but today, but the basis of Beit Shammai is the tefillah bizman mitzvah, which means you have to dunk at the exact time that you're chayevet to dunk in the mikveh. Okay, so it's your day to go in the mikveh, you must go today. Since there's a suffix about which day she needs to go to the mikveh, now we'll see for what, there's going to be all sorts of possible things she has to go to the mikveh for, therefore she has to tovel 95 times. Sounds a bit extreme.
The problem is she's a shota. She won't be able to count. She won't be able to figure it out. She won't be able to abide.
Right. It's a big question, right? And, well, we saw that there were, you know, they did bedikas for shotot, you know, it's like someone will have to take care of toveling her and making sure. Again, she's married to someone, so she needs to be responsible for, you know, someone needs to take responsibility for her.
95 times in what time?
Ah, so we're going to get to it. We don't, let's just leave it aside right now, because we want to keep focused with why we're here, and then we're going to get into that, okay? I won't promise you all 95 days yet, but we're gonna start getting there today. So, okay, that's Beit Shammai. Beit Hillel omrim 35. Oh, well, sounds a lot better, but if you think about it, that's still a ton. 35 days. Okay. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Dayala Tfila Shetei Bachrona. The last one is fine. Okay? She can tovel once, and that's all we need. Okay? So now we're going to see what's going on here. So, or why we brought this. Bishlama Shavua Rishon Lo Meshameshet. So now, why can she only... We want to focus first right now on this 35 days. Why on the 35th day is she allowed to sleep with her husband and not before that? So Bishlama Shavua Rishon Lo Meshameshet Emar Yoledet Zachar. The first 7 days we're concerned. Maybe she gave birth to a male and it was yesterday. So therefore, the first week, for sure she can't. Shavua Sheni Emar Yoledet Nekevai. That's also very easy, right? Okay, female. She gave birth to a female, she needs 14 days. Shavua Shlishi, the third week, Eimar Yoledet Nikeva Bezofi. Okay, this is, by the way, what we go by nowadays, why we don't have anything called Dam Tohar, because we say all Nashim Yoldot Bezov, which means that potentially when you were in your Zava days before you gave birth, which means that now to get out of Tumah and be allowed to your husband, you have to count 7 clean days. That's why we nowadays don't have Dam Torah, we count 7 clean days. So therefore, maybe, in this case, now we just assume that that's the case, but they're saying maybe she was Yoledet Bezov, in which case she needs 7 clean days. So after the 14 days, we now need to count another 7 days for the Zava and have clean days. Now, she's good because she has 7 clean days, so now she's good. But, Ela Shavua Rivi'i, so now they say, but wait, here comes the question. It started with a bishlama, right? This is why he had a question. Now, the fourth week, theoretically, if she gave birth, it should be dam tohar. Now, why can we assume she gave birth? According to Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, what do we assume? Rov nashim yoldot, which means This woman left pregnant. She came back not pregnant. Lav mishum delo azlina bataruba. So shouldn't we follow Rove? In which case, week number four, she should already be allowed to sleep with her husband because even if she sees blood, it's dam tohar. Okay? So shouldn't we say that? And then this basically goes against Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. So now we understood how we question Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. Because if, according to Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, we follow Rove Nashim, this woman gave birth, right? And we can assume she gave birth based on Rove, in which case we should allow her to her husband in week number four. So now the question is, Elamai lo yadana mai tiyufta. So what was Ravin's problem? It seems like a pretty obvious question. If we follow Rove, clearly, after we get through all the problematic days, there's definitely some dam tohar here. So what's the problem? Oh no, you forgot something very important. Okay, Ravin says, Imar hechika ledata. We could say that we don't know when she gave birth. She could have given birth 2 months ago. She could be already finished by the time then, right? So 2 months, let's say, right? That's already 60 days. Let's say she gave birth, a month before, 30 days. Then, by the time she waits her 7 and then the 14, she's already done with her 40 days, in which case she has no more dam tohar, because we don't know, maybe it was only a male and she only gets 40 days. So we have no idea when she gave birth. So therefore, maybe she's already finished with her dam tohar. Okay. So now so that's why Ravin thinks this actually isn't a question of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, because even if you follow Rov Nashim Yoldot, still she wouldn't be allowed. Now we say, okay, but Hach Shavua Chamishi, so now we have a question on the rest of the Brayta. Now we have to go back to the other numbers. Hach Shavua Chamishi de Tahorhu Tishamesh. But now she gets to week four. So week four, let's say she wasn't, okay, if it's Dam Torah, she's allowed to her husband, even though she's bleeding. If it's Dam Nida, because she's done with her dam tohar, well then she's got 7 days of bleeding. So theoretically, she can go to the mikvah after the end of the fourth week, and the beginning of the fifth week, she should be permitted to her husband. So why not? So what do we say? So shavua chamishi de tahoru tishamesh. So what do we say? No, because hach shavua rivi'i kol yoma v'yoma misapkin besof leidah b'tchilat nida. So we say, well, what's the issue? Every single day of that week could be the last day of her dam tohar, and then the next day will be the first day of nida. So theoretically, her dam tohar could have ended at day number 27. And if you look at the chart, right, day number 28 could potentially have been her first day of nida, which means she's only, right, count from there, when does her 7 days of nida end? At day 34, which means she goes to the mikvah the night of the 35th, and that's why she's mutar on the night of the 35th. Okay? So, right? So we could say that the 28th day was really the beginning of Nida. Right? So then she needs another 7 for Nida. Okay, now we have another question. But at least on the 21st day, she should be allowed to sleep with her husband because, right? If she's bezov, now what's the issue here? Now, there's a big difference, nida and zava, that what? The nida goes to the mikvah at the end of the 7 days, at the night of the 8th. So that's what we just said. Her nida days would end on day number 34. She'd go to the mikvah the night of the 35th and be mutar that night already to her husband. But zava is different. Zava goes, like most tovlim, she tovels in the morning of day number 7. So when's her day number 7, according to this, right? We said the third week is potential Zava days. So she now has, it's potential that she was Yoledet B'Zav, she needs 7 clean days. On day number 7 in the morning, she goes to the mikvah on the 21st day. So why don't we say that before she ends up bleeding on day number 22, that day at least, she should be permitted to her husband after she tovels in the mikvah. So what did they answer? No, it's Rabbi Shimon. The Mishnah holds like Rabbi Shimon. De'amar, asur la'asokin shema tavoli de safek. Remember the status of a person who goes to the mikvah in the morning? Right? She still needs, it's what happens. It's a very weird thing, I think, in our eyes to understand. But she goes to the mikvah in the morning, but she still needs 7 clean days. So she has to make sure that the rest of that day she's clean. It's just her tefillah in the morning will kick in at nighttime. She's allowed to travel in the morning. If, for whatever reason, she sees blood that day, well, then it's canceled out. So according to Rabbi Shimon, she can't sleep with her husband during the day that day because, assuming it's okay to sleep with your husband during the day, right? We already had a whole discussion about that. But she can't for a different reason, which is maybe she'll see blood that day. So Rabbi Shimon says she's not allowed to sleep with her husband, even though she's already tovel. So what do they say? Le'orta teshamesh. But then at least the night of the 21st, right, they're assuming right now that when she sees on day number 22, she sees during the day blood. So at least that night after, when it's suns, right, after Tzedek Kochavim, she should be allowed to sleep with her husband. So what do they say? Oh no, it's Medubark Sharata Ba'erev. It's telling you that when she saw on the of the 22nd, she saw at the night of the 22nd, right, when night kicked in and there was no opportunity to sleep with her husband. In other words, what they're basically saying is there's a potential there if she didn't believe right away that that night of the 22nd she could have, but no, she didn't because she saw blood. Okay, finally, we're going to get back to what's really keeping you curious, which is Tishim B'chamesh Tfilot, right? What's with this Tishim B'chamesh Tfilot? Okay? Shavua kama matzbilino ta belelvata. The first week, she tovels every night. Why every night? Well, emra yoledet zachar hi. Maybe she's a yoledet zachar. And potentially, day number one could be this after 7 days of leida. Day number two could potentially be after 7 days of leida. Okay, basically, we have to worry that every day that week might have been, around, remember, tefillah b'zman mitzvah, you have to go when it's your night. So every night could potentially have been yoledet zachar. Now, if you remember, yoledet is like a nida. So nida goes to the mikvah at the end, right, the night of the 8th. Then also, the yoledet does the same, the night of the 8th also, if it was a zachar. So every night, she goes to the mikvah. Shavua sheni, matbilino tabalavata, you could figure out why, emar yoledet nekevahi. Right? We have to worry that maybe she was yoledet nekeva. She certainly can't be yoledet zachar anymore. We don't have to worry about yoledet zachar anymore because we got rid of all that in all the previous week. But this week could potentially be, and you know, it could be she's done with all her nekeva, you know, her tumah days, but we don't know. So every possible day could be for yoledet nekeva. So she dunks every night also. But biyamama, she also has to tovel during the day. Why? Imar yoledet zachar bezovhi. Maybe she was yoledet bezov. And now, why didn't we worry about this the first week? Well, we can't tovel someone for her zava after her shevenikim when she didn't count shevenikim. But theoretically, the whole first week could have been her shevenikim. In which case, she needs to go to the mikveh now. She needs to write tovel every day in the morning. Because maybe, and as if tefillah b'zman mitzvah, don't wait till nighttime, tovel every day in the morning, because maybe she was done with her zachar days or even her nekeva days, and that first week counted as her shevenikim for her yoledet bezov, in which case now, every single day, right, because maybe today, or maybe her 7 days started on day number two, maybe her 7 days started on day number three, we don't know. So every single, since she had a week without blood, we can count them as Shevenikim, and now every day possible, so now she dunks every time during the day. So that adds another 7. So we now got up to 21 in only 14 days, right? Okay. Shavua shlishi matbilin la biyamama. So now the third week, she only dunks during the day because we're not worried anymore about yoledet nekevar, yoledet zachar. We're done with that. The only possible thing could be yoledet bezov. Imar yoledet nekeva bezovhi. That's it would have to be, the only suffix would be that she was yoledet nekeva, in which case her last week didn't count as her shevenikim. But this week is her Shevenikim, right? In other words, or theoretically, she could have been Yoledet Nekeva, and her Nekeva days ended on day number 8 here. In which case, right, she's already had 7 clean days. So every single day of that week is potential the end of her 7 clean days. And Belelvata, also at night, why? Now here's a whole another reason why she's going to have to dunk that week in the morning and at night. Bechamai l'tahamayu, they go l'shitatam de'amre tfulat yom aroch bay tfila. Okay, what does this mean? This means, okay, what's tfila? Generally, we call a someone who's a zava, right, has 7 clean days, she tovels in the morning, and that person, right, anyone who goes to the mikvah in the morning and waits till nighttime is called a tful yom. Now, what happens at the end of that day? Do they have to tovel to get out of it? That day, they're really teholim, okay? And in fact, potentially, what did we say? She's really mutar to her husband. Just Rabbi Shimon said you shouldn't. But theoretically, she's already Torah because she went to the mikvah. When the day ends, she, like magically, you know, she's Torah without doing anything. But Beit Shammai says that, okay, now what's the comparison? In a tful yom, what do we have?
Okay, and it's full yom, she's tahor, but she needs to wait till nighttime, right? And at nighttime, she becomes fully tahora, right? She's not really fully tahora, but she is tahora in the morning. That's just like the dam tohar. What happens in the dam tohar case? She's bleeding, but she's actually tahora, okay? However, she's not fully tahora, meaning, right, what's the issue, by the way, that she has to wait? She has to wait for truma, really. Mikaradin, she has to wait to eat truma or kudshim, okay? Likewise, in our case, dam tohar, she's permitted to her husband, but she has to wait for kudshim, all those things, right? She's still tmeah. And what happens? Well, she waits, whether it's 26 days in the suffix case, 33 days if it's a male, 66 days if it's a female. At the end of that, theoretically, it's just like a tful yom. What happens? Magically, nothing, there's no act that has to happen. She doesn't, in the tful yom case, she doesn't go to the mikveh at night again. Just, you know, the stars are out, she's fine. So likewise, when it comes to dam tohar, what will we assume? The day ends, the day number 80, let's say, or day number 40, or whatever day it is, and magically, she's tohara. Beit Shammai says no. Tfulat yom aroch, this is like a yom aroch, okay? And it's not like a tful yom, which is just a day. There we can say she went to Mecca in the morning, so she's tohara in the evening. But when we're talking about such a long period of time, there has to be some sort of end, some sort of act at the end. That you need tefillah for. So now, therefore, since maybe we don't know her chika leidata, maybe she's at the end of her dam tohar at this point. So therefore, every day of that week, she needs to tovel at night, because maybe that's the signifying the end of her dam tohar. Okay, so I've gotten you up to how many? 35, okay? If you look at the chart, you can see the first week at night, the second week in the day and the night, that's another 14, so 21. The third week in the day and the night, right? Because maybe it was Nikeva Bezov, and maybe at night was the end of her dam tohar. So we got up to 35. We're still missing 60. We'll do that tomorrow. Have to wait in suspense.